As we look around in our country, we find that much of America is currently embroiled in some type or some form of controversy. If you watch anything relative to the news, you know that there is a lot of discussion right now about our flag and the national anthem. Likely all of us have heard at least some kind of discussion about the NFL. If you don't follow much of the news, though, here is some of the lesser known news. You may have seen that just a few days ago, there was a superintendent, a school superintendent in Louisiana, who said that the student athletes at this school needed to stand. If they didn't stand, they were going to, quote unquote, face consequences. You may have also seen a few days ago, there was the 6-year-old in school, and the 6-year-old decided to kneel versus stand when the Pledge of Allegiance was said, and that created a great deal of controversy. As we think about the current debate, and it is a significant debate, who's right? We might ask, what is right? What should Christians think and believe about the current discussion? Well, there are a lot of discussions over the years as we go back the last 50 years, the last 100, the last 200 years, and surely even beyond that. There have been a lot of discussions about Christians and civil government and things like flags. Some claim that there is no connection at all between the Christian faith and civil government. That, however, cannot be right. If you go back to the Old Testament, there is a passage which describes Jesus in many ways. It's in the 9th chapter of Isaiah. In Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 6, as Isaiah is going through and talking about the Lord, he says, out of all things, the government shall be on his shoulder. The government was going to be on the shoulder of Jesus Christ. So that is a verse as we think about Christ and Christianity and civil government that's relevant to the discussion. Then as you start thinking about God and government, you can begin with the Old Testament and you can find other passages which somehow associate God and civil government. Beyond what we have in Isaiah chapter 9, you may remember that in Daniel chapter 2, we have some information about a king named Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is that king who had a dream. And that dream puzzled Nebuchadnezzar, so he calls all the wise men, the people that he thought could possibly interpret that dream, and everybody fails. Finally, Daniel is called to interpret the dream. And Daniel is able to unfold that dream for the king, and Daniel tells the king, this dream is about world powers. Here you are, you're in power, you are from the nation of Babylon. And for a time, Babylon is going to be in power. But then Daniel said other kingdoms are going to come into power. Talked about 4 kingdoms. And then ultimately there was the 5th kingdom, which would be the kingdom of Christ, but 4 earthly kingdoms. That 4th kingdom, of course, was going to be Rome. And that's what did come into power. That was what was in power when Jesus came into the world. The Bible is not silent when we deal with subjects such as God and government. It's also not completely silent when we deal with God's people and government. It's sometimes said that the Bible does address government. People will recognize verses like Daniel 2 and Isaiah chapter 9, but they will allege, they will affirm that Christians, as they look at their lives, the civil government is not really relevant to them. I've heard it sometimes said that, well, we are a member of that heavenly kingdom. We're a member of Christ's kingdom. And because our emphasis is on the spiritual, we really don't want to have anything to do. We can ignore civil government. Well, that's not the wise. That's not the right choice either. For a scripture reading, we just heard the last verse in the book of Judges. What we heard from Judges is not the only time that statement is used in the book of Judges, but that is how the book of Judges ends. Every man decided to do that which was right in his own eyes. Have you ever wondered if the United States were set up in this kind of way? In America, imagine everybody living according to the way that they think is right. You get to live as you see fit. Can you imagine what it would be like driving down the highway? Everybody decides to get the speed that they want. They can determine how fast, how slowly they want to drive. Well, that, of course, if that were the way that driving were done, that would turn into a deadly, if not dangerous, situation. Speed limits would be determined by each individual. There might be some people who would say, I feel like I can drive under the influence. That's my right. So they would be driving under the influence. There would be another person, perhaps, who says, well, I get angry when I'm on the road. And because people anger me, I'm going to run them off. I'm going to get a big SUV, and the next time somebody angers me, I'm just going to push them off, maybe into a ravine, maybe off the side of a cliff. Well, that would be right if everybody could do what was right in their own eyes. If someone wanted something that we had, and it were right to live in such a way as the end of Judges describes, that could be taken from us, we could take from them, thieves would be within their rights. If someone wanted to rob a bank, that would be within their right, because everyone was living according to their own law. Imagine if you can, a society which exists, and there is no law, or there is no enforceable law. people living according to the standard in Judges chapter 21 and verse 25 will have problems. And Israel had problems. A few other people have tried to live in that way throughout time, and they've also had many difficulties. Lawless societies are ways to guarantee disorder and chaos. A country as large as ours would be filled with many problems if we allowed anarchy to rule. As you go back and you look at history, especially through the eyes of archaeologists, there are some archaeologists that have gone into the area of Mesopotamia, over there where many things happened as far as Bible events, and they, as they dug in the dirt, as they've excavated, they have dug up some very interesting items. They've uncovered, for example, some statements which deal with property rights. They've uncovered some information which deals with damages and reparations. You see, even way back when, men realized that they needed to have rules in society. If society was going to have stability, if people were going to get along, if there was not going to be absolute chaos, there had to be some kind of rule, there had to be some kind of regulation, some kind of government needed to be in existence, and it needed to enforce the laws. As we start thinking about things from a Christian perspective, it is, as we go through life, essential to realize that we are people who have what might be referred to as a dual citizenship. This is taught in the Old Testament. This is also taught in the New. If you were to go back to the book of Psalms, 119th Psalm, that psalm which is so long, in the ninth verse of Psalm 119, it says, "We are sojourners on the earth." That implies that we are headed somewhere else. It implies that this world is not our home. It also suggests, though, that for a time, we are citizens on this planet. We are going to be under a government. And then in the New Testament, I'm going to be reading more of this, but in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11, I'm going to start with verse 12 and read down through verse 16 in just a minute. But in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11, as Peter begins to introduce this section, he says, "Beloved, I beseech you as sojourners and pilgrims." Like Psalm 119, verse 9, Peter indicates that, yes, we are a citizen here. Yes, we have some responsibilities here. This is not our final citizenship. This is not our final home. But for a while, this is where we must abide. After he says what he does in 1 Peter 2:11, he says, "I beseech you as sojourners and pilgrims." He says, beginning in verse 12, he says, "I want you to have your behavior. I want you to have your actions as seemly as good among the Gentiles, that wherein they speak against you as evildoers, that they may see your good works, which they behold, glorify God on the day of visitation." He then begins to deal with civil government. He says, "Be subject to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether the king as supreme or unto governors as sent by him, for vengeance on evildoers and for praise to the same that do well. For so is the will of God, that by well-doing ye should put to silence the ignorance of foolish men." Verse 16, "As free and not using your freedom for a cloak of wickedness, but as bondservants of God." Summed up, Peter says, "I want you to be good citizens. You are under earthly rule. There is a system in place, and you need to live according to that system. You need to behave according to that system. Otherwise, you're not going to fulfill God's plan for your life." As Peter begins to talk about citizenship, he makes it clear that it is possible to act in unseemly, undesirable, bad ways. And he says to God's people, "You do not want to do that. The actions that you engage in this life should glorify God. They should be turning people to God instead of turning people away from God." As you think about some of the images that we've seen, some of these go back in time, but maybe trampling a flag. That has not been a proven way to glorify God. Putting a flag on the floor, as was done a few days ago in Chicago. Maybe you saw that story, maybe not. That's also not worked. Objecting to the national anthem, which has been a growing problem, has often made people angry rather than turning people to God. Showing disrespect for a nation's history, showing disrespect for a nation's symbols, that generally angers at least some citizens. And Peter says that's not the way that we want to live. Unnecessarily angering people is not the business that we're in. Now, there may be some actions which are wrong. There may be some actions which need to be objected to. There may be some actions which need to be protested. All of those points may be right. But may I say, based on 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 12 through 16, that there is a better way. I have some books. Quite a few books that are not exactly new. Some of the books are religious. And some of those religious books go back a few hundred years. And some of the books on my shelves, which are not exactly new, are not religious. This past week, I pulled out a Weeblos book. A Weeblos book, if you're not familiar with it, is part of the scouting program. This particular book was published in 1969. If you are involved with Cub Scouts, you can eventually move up into the Weeblos program, and the Weeblos would occur before Boy Scouts. Weeblo, if you have heard that but don't know what it means will be loyal scouts. And as I flipped through that book, I found some information that I expected to find. There is some information in the Weeblo handbook about citizenship. And after I flipped through that book for a little while, I went back to the book prior to that, and that would be the Cub Scout book. It's been a long time since I flipped through a Cub Scout book. But as I flipped through the Cub Scout book, I found that even in the Cub Scout book, for those younger men, there's also information about citizenship. As I read through the information about citizenship, I was reminded of the fact that as kids were Cub Scouts, at least in the past, they were even given suggested flag ceremonies. Not that they threw the flag on the ground, not that they trampled it, not that they disrespected it. And then as I flipped through my books, I went back to an old Boy Scout handbook. I reviewed a section which talked about citizenship. In the section, there was information about how to get a particular badge for it, and I found these words. It says, your flag is a symbol of a growing, changing, dynamic nation. It is the flag of the people, all the people. Men have defended your flag with their blood and their lives because it stands for all the good about your country. Others, going back many years, have defiled the flag as a symbol of things about the U.S. they don't like. There will always be people who have some things about this country that they don't like. Even Christians. As they look at America, there are some things that they don't particularly care for when it comes to America. If people will hate, if people will protest and detest Jesus Christ and the cross, and there are people who do that, then certainly we should not be surprised to find people who object to a flag, an anthem, or even a country. For the Christian, though, we can't control what the people in the world do. For the Christian, though, being a good citizen is the right choice. Peter makes that clear in 1 Peter chapter 2. But there was another apostle by the name of Paul. And Paul writes something similar in the book of Romans, Romans chapter 13. I'm also going to be reading from that chapter, Romans chapter 13, starting with verse 1 and going down through verse 7. He says, let every soul, not just some folks, but he says, let every soul be in subjection to the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. And the powers that be are ordained of God. Therefore, he that resisteth the power withstandeth the ordinance of God. And they that withstand shall receive in themselves judgment. For rulers are not a terror to the good work, but to the evil. And wouldest thou have no fear of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise from the same. Verse 4. For he is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is a minister of God, an avenger for wrath to him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must, he said, be in subjection, not only because of the wrath of God, but for conscience sake. For this cause ye pay tribute also, that they are ministers of God's service, attending continually upon this very thing. And then he says in verse 7, render all to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. The Roman government, as we look back in time, it was not a perfect government. The Roman government was a government that had a lot of problems. In fact, it was this government, this very government that Daniel had talked about in Daniel chapter 2, that persecuted and put to death many Christians. And yet, as we look at Christians like Paul, they were not out holding protests, they were not burning flags and objecting to anthems. You see, the right perspective for the Christian, when it comes to our anthem and our flag and who knows what may be here in the next decade, the right perspective is to realize that we are dual citizens. We have a heavenly citizenship, and we also have an earthly citizenship. We want to be as respectful as possible when it comes to our earthly citizenship. 1 Peter chapter 2, Romans chapter 13. And we want to be especially mindful of the fact that we have primarily a citizenship in heaven. All too often, as we look at controversies like this, people get wrapped up in civil government. They get wrapped up in the things of this life and they begin to overlook, they begin to de-emphasize the spiritual. God's kingdom is almost shelved. If we love our country, it is possible to lose focus on what really matters. The devil is very good at messing up priorities. And that seems to be one of the things that he's doing right now, even with some Christians. It's good and it's right to respect a country. Don't let, though, patriotism interfere with the spiritual. I know that that line can be blurred, even with the best people, because of an Old Testament prophet. You may remember that towards the end of the Old Testament, you have a prophet by the name of Jonah. Jonah was living at a very important time in Israel's history. As you go back and you look at the time of Jonah, you find that during this time, Israel was in a period of what might be referred to as national pride. Israel, as you look at that time, they were not out to use modern events. They were not out stamping on the flag. They were not out burning the flag. They were not objecting to the singing of national anthem. No, at this time in Israel's history, the kingdom of Israel had expanded some. Things were going very, very well. People in Israel were happy. But even though they were happy, things were not good. There was a lot of sin in Israel. One of the prophets that was also working in this area was Amos at the time. You can go back and you can read through that book to see what things were like. But Amos, Jonah, headed in different places. But Syria and Assyria, they were both in a weakened state, but Israel had experienced some expansion, and they were thinking that things looked good. Not only did the nation of Israel think that things were looking good, they began to look at other nations. Nations like Syria, they began to look down on them. God's people may have felt like celebrating, but God's prophets came along and said, you have some problems. Jonah, of course, goes to see the people in the capital of Assyria. That was the city of Nineveh. God knew that within 50 years, Assyria would come against and conquer the northern section of Israel. But during the time of Jonah, Jonah was proud of his homeland. He was someone who we might say would be out waving the flag, and he didn't want to help any enemies of his nation. If you were to flip back to the book of Jonah, at the end of the third chapter, you would find that God turned away from punishing Nineveh, at least for a time. And this fact, Jonah chapter 4 and verse 1, the text there says that Jonah was angry. He wanted his homeland to prosper. He didn't want his homeland to be overcome. He didn't want enemies to benefit. And when God was merciful to the enemies of Israel, he was very, very upset. In Jonah chapter 4 and verse 2, if you were to look at that verse, Jonah specifically says, my country. This guy was a patriotic guy. This guy was a preacher. And as he looked at his country, he wanted good things for his country. Jonah 4:2 says, and he prayed unto Jehovah and said, I pray thee, O Jehovah, was this not my saying? I knew that you were a gracious God. I knew that you were a loving God. And I knew that if you went over there with the Assyrians, you'd let them off the hook. God, what about our people? What about the nation of Israel? He said, I pray thee, O Jehovah, was this not my saying when I was yet in my country? He's the patriot. Therefore I hasted to flee unto Tarshish, for I knew that thou art a gracious God, a merciful, slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness. And then as you get down, in verses 3 and 4 of Jonah chapter 4, Jonah essentially says, God, if you're going to spare the enemies, if you're not going to take these people out who are opposed to your people, the Hebrew people, he says, kill me. That's a pretty strong patriot. God, I love my people. And yet you're going to let these enemies off the hook. You're going to let them in some respects prosper. And if that's what's going to be for my country, just take my life. I don't want to live any longer. We've come to a time, sadly, in this country, when a growing number of people seem to hate, not have much respect for the United States of America. Did you hear a few days ago about the NSA contractor who smuggled out classified documents in her pantyhose? That's just one of many stories. Or, recent news, did you hear about the information concerning the West Point graduate who seems to be now promoting or supporting communism? There are a growing number of people who are somehow dissatisfied with their country. And as all of this stuff begins to swirl around, and it's now even affecting the schools, what side should we take? What should we believe? What position should we take? Someone says, well, you're a Christian. What do you believe? What do you think the Bible teaches? Well, here's what the Bible teaches. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 21. You remember there Jesus said, render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God what belongs to him. Jesus claimed in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 21 that the government deserves certain things. Now, that was said in the context of being under Roman rule. These guys were bad guys. These guys were hostile to God's people. And yet Jesus said, give to Caesar what belongs to him. Civil government, a person's native country, it deserves respect, even if the leaders are despicable and sinful. It deserves integrity from citizens, even if its inhabitants do not like what the government is doing. It deserves uprightness, righteousness for those who deal with its secrets, classified information. If that's not done, and people decide that they're going to do what's right in their own eyes, Judges 21 and verse 25, before long, we have chaos. And it will not be long before God is not welcome in the homes, in the families, in the marriages, schools, recreation, culture, morality, hearts, lives, and minds of the citizens in that country. We should be praying that our country will head people back to the right type of thinking. That's what Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 2. Pray for those that are in power. They need our prayers. But our thinking also needs to be correct. We need to stay focused on the right matter. That is, we are dual citizens, and what matters most is that heavenly, that spiritual citizenship. As I was drafting this material, I was given some information from a Christian who was here about 4 years ago with a door-knocking campaign. This Christian, on a Facebook post, recently wrote these words. She said, "There's something about hearing shots, gunshots ring out, and seeing bodies bagged up that reignites the fire, that reminds you this soul-winning business we are in as Christians is not some cutesy part-time affair to be approached as a casual hobby. People die every day, young, old, in every beautiful shade. You watch a body get bagged, and then tell me how you feel if you recognize the face and realize you didn't share the news that could have helped that person prepare his or her soul for eternity." And then in caps, "Stop getting caught up in the things that don't matter. Help save some soul today." She was right. We can become so obsessed, so concerned with the things involving this life that the devil gets our attention off the spiritual. We are citizens of two countries. This earth, yes. Do some things on this earth need to be addressed? Yes. But never forget the most important focus. And that is, we are also citizens of that great eternal kingdom. That being the case, are we people who try to be good citizens? Do we seek to respect the symbols of this country, whatever country it is on earth, ours or another? And most importantly, do we seek to honor and respect the Christian faith? Are we a participating member in the kingdom of Jesus Christ? We can be the best citizen that this earth has ever seen, but not have a part in God's eternal kingdom. And that is so sad, so wrong. But think correctly about citizenship. Doing the best we can here in life, 1 Peter chapter 2, Romans chapter 13, but also making sure that we're part of the heavenly kingdom. Someone says, "Well, but heavenly kingdom, that interests me. I believe in Christ, that's good. I want to live in accordance with the Bible, that's good. I'm even willing to confess that Christ is the Son of God." Have you been baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of every single sin? And having risen from the waters of baptism, are you now seeking to walk with Christ in the right way every single day? Citizenship. We've all got it as far as the United States. Are we in God's kingdom and recognized as a citizen in good standing? That's the question that we're asking as we stand and sing the selected song.